This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A bit later in the hour, we'll be looking at the future of driving, how to prepare for a world full of electric cars. But first, this week, President Trump signed Space Policy Directive 1, directing NASA to make plans for returning American astronauts to the moon.
We will not only plant our flag and leave our footprint, we will establish a foundation for an eventual mission to Mars, and perhaps someday to many worlds beyond.
The directive, however, does not allocate any new funding for the effort, and it's not clear how much of the national space policy it will actually change. Here to talk about that and other short subjects in science is Annalee Newitz. She's the tech culture editor at Ars Technica in San Francisco. Welcome back, Annalee.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So what is the take-home message about this moon proposal?
Well, it sounds really great. It's always good to have a president, especially one who's been so anti-science, saying something positive about scientific exploration. But we have heard this from presidents before. Both the Bush presidents promised we'd be going back to the moon. And the fact is, if, you know, there's no money being given to NASA to do this, it's going to be very difficult. You know, we're talking about maybe needing billions of dollars more to speed up the process of going to the moon. So I think this is a situation where, you know, we'll believe it when we see some funding.
Yeah, so it's just basically words. Words are cheap now, is what you're saying. Talk is cheap.
Talk is cheap, but it always sounds good to be talking about going to space.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to elsewhere in Washington. Regarding yesterday, the FCC voted to overturn the net neutrality rules that had been in place under the Obama administration. Where does that go from here? Is there going to be pushback on this?
Absolutely. And we've already heard a lot of talk, especially from state attorney generals, the New York State Attorney General, Washington State Attorney General. They're being joined by a number of other attorney generals to challenge this in court. They will probably be filing for an injunction and filing a court case within the next couple of weeks. And so this is going to be a long, drawn-out court process before we actually see these rules suspended, as Ajit Pai had promised.
Is there anything that Congress can do here if it doesn't like it?
That's also in the works. We've heard that some Democrats in the House are interested in introducing legislation that would formalize the rules of net neutrality, which had up until this point just been a regulatory framework. So that's another possibility. So we're going to see this playing out in the courts, possibly playing out in Congress, and it's going to be a long, long fight. And hopefully people will learn more about net neutrality along the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a fight for decades now, so just move it on the next pace. Let's move on from policy. There are new findings about a Neolithic weapon. Whoa, what does that mean?
That's right. This is a Neolithic forensics mystery. When we look back at the Neolithic period, which is in the UK and Western Europe, that's about 4,000 years ago to about 3,000 years ago, there's a number of terrible crimes that took place. And archaeologists have found evidence of massacres where whole villages, men, women, and children, were killed with blunt force trauma to the skull. And this kind of trauma leaves a very characteristic kind of injury where there's a kind of depression in the skull with a spider web of cracks kind of coming out of it. And archaeologists have wondered, what kind of weapon were people using for human-on-human violence, as opposed to the kinds of range weapons like spears that they might use on animals? So a number of years ago, archaeologists in the UK found a possible culprit, and it's a weapon that they called the Thames Beater. And it's a wooden club that looks astonishingly like a cricket bat. It's a club with a kind of flattened oar-like end. And so two archaeologists this week described in Antiquity magazine how they did an experiment to figure out whether the Thames Beater was responsible for some of these ancient crimes.
Wow. You know, maybe that Thames Beater, somebody picked it up and hit it with a little round ball sometime and discovered, hey, there's something better than hitting a person with it.
What the archaeologists did was they recreated human skulls using plastic and ballistics gel. So they basically had plastic balls full of goo to imitate human brains. Yeah. And then they recreated a Thames beater and smashed these fake human skulls to see if it would leave the same kind of damage. And it did. So it looks like the Thames beater was responsible for these ancient murders. And it's interesting because it gives us a look at how people looked at interpersonal violence 4,000 years ago. This is a very intimate weapon. You know, you had to get in close to someone to really do damage. And so to kill someone else, you kind of took your life in your own hands. So it's interesting. It's an interesting window on how violence worked long ago between people. Mm.
On a more peaceful level, there's research into anesthetics in plants. Tell us about that.
It turns out that plants can be made unconscious, essentially, using anesthesia. A group of scientists exposed a number of plants, but most interestingly, a Venus flytrap, to ether. They basically took a Venus flytrap, stuck it in a bag with some ether gas, and exposed it for a while. And once it had been anesthetized, when the scientists would touch the trigger hairs on the Venus flytrap, that's the thing that makes the trap close up really fast, the trap would no longer close. So effectively, the Venus flytrap was unconscious, and the effects wore off after about 15 minutes. And the thing that was super interesting about this was, well, first of all, it means that plants can become unconscious, which raises all kinds of questions about plant consciousness. Mm. But in terms of its applicability to humans, it turns out that plants are becoming unconscious almost the same way animals do, because what this anesthesia does, and ether is just one kind of anesthesia that does this, is it depresses the electrical signaling between cells. It basically causes less electricity to flow between cells, which creates a kind of paralysis. So now we know that both animals and plants can be subject to this kind of process with anesthesia. So it does mean, I guess, that you can make your wiggly plants a little more still, but also it gives us insight into how anesthesia works, yeah, which is still kind of a mystery.
It is cool. And one day, Annalee, we're going to discuss consciousness in plants, so be prepared for that.
I am eager to do that.
Annalee Newitz is a tech culture editor at Ars Technica in San Francisco. Thanks for being with us today, and holiday greetings to you.
Yeah, happy Hanukkah.